Half a day. Welcome, everybody. Thank you so much for joining us for this edition of Finatsu. I'm Nate Flores, and I'm honored to be here with you all today. I get to host this episode of Finatsu with some incredible guests and good friends, Salam Kashru Yunus from Saipan with Medianus for Palestine. And also Jihei Choi with Medianus for Palestine. And we're here to give you all an update. But first, just to introduce folks a little bit, Jihei is just one of the younger organizers in Medianus for Palestine. In right after October 6th, a lot of us were sharing as much news and information as we could on social media, and Jihei noticed some of the orgs who were quite active doing that, and actually reached out to many of us about trying to start some campaign work here in Gohan. And so that's we immediately reached out to Issa Ariola, who immediately reached out to Jihan, who reached out to Salam. And here we are today. And it's been 6 months. It's been 6 months of watching this horrible genocide and ethnic cleansing being carried out against Palestinian people by Israel. But of course, this all didn't just start on October 6th. This has been happening for over 75 years with the settler colonial project that is Israel, taking place in historic Palestine and in what is today currently occupied Palestine. And we're very honored to have with us Salam Yunus, who is our lead organizer. Salam, thank you so much for joining us, Chalu.
Buenas tardes, marhaba. Glad to be here again, and thanks so much. It's an honor. I wish we were here discussing something else. One day, definitely, we'll be here talking about a free Palestine, a free Gohan, free Marianas, free everybody, Haiti, Sudan, Congo, all of it. So we're here to give an update. It's really been difficult. 6 months, half a year of this genocide. Last time we were here, I believe the death toll was only half of what it is now. It's doubled, and it's been actually increasing the rate. It is one of the most horrific moments in modern history that we are watching, and I still can't believe that a lot of people are actually blind to what is really going on. And we're here to discuss more of that, how to get to more people, because that's all we got to keep doing is, educate, protest, disrupt, make people aware. And so that's what we,
Thank you, Chatlu, and welcome. Jihei, would you like to say a few thoughts before we jump before we dive in?
I'm just really grateful to be here and be a part of, this collective movement to say no to this US-backed occupation and genocide of Palestinians. We want a free Palestine, and I really do believe that it will happen. And I'm just really, really grateful to be in this movement with you guys. Thanks for having us.
Thank you both so much. So why don't we go ahead and start the conversation first with sort of, thinking about some of the things that maybe people aren't aware of. There's so much news. Every other minute, there's an update. We've really been following these things closely. We're learning a lot from the technology, the AI, the artificial intelligence, to the ground attacks, to the issues of starvation. We're constantly learning, and new things are being uncovered. More of Israel's war crimes are being uncovered and investigated. And I wanted to check in with you both. What are some of the things, the topics that you think maybe people might not be aware of that we should talk about, some of the things that we're following a little bit more closely that we, that we'd like people to think about and pay closer attention to.
Yeah, I like to start off on a, just on a few of the positives that has happened since we last been on here. And because it's been really difficult, you know, it's so hard every day. So it's just to see a little bit of good news helps a lot to keep the movement going. So like recently, first of all, the mounting pressure on the government of Israel, whether it's from their own citizens to get Netanyahu out, or from international pressure from the UN or the ICJ. Yes, we finally had that ceasefire resolution passed. The US did not veto it, but they abstained. Although it's not really been enforced, because Israel keeps, or the IDF, IOF keeps bombing. They still, the bombardment continues. And the starvation too. You've seen the recent news of the killing of the aid workers. So it's actually been getting worse since the UN resolution. And, but we still have to take that as a positive, because we're seeing Zionism exposed for the ugly evil that it is. And, you know, there's more pressure. We're seeing diplomatic ties being cut with their government. I just heard of like a troop withdrawal from Gaza. So that's, you know, we want them all out of Gaza. So these kind of news, like, is really good to hear, because the past 6 months is fucking unbelievable, fucking crazy.
Yeah, I appreciate, you know, your thoughts on the UN ceasefire resolution. Four resolutions failed to pass before this one, right? Or three before this one. And it was because of the US vetoing them. And now they've abstained. It says a lot about how international human rights laws are being observed and ignored. But also, one thing I appreciate you talking about are, you know, other countries pulling away their diplomatic ties. I mean, I can't wait to see is sanctions. We need to see trade sanctions and other ways that other countries can step in to impact this economically, because that seems to be something that everybody responds to, right? And I don't know why Israel hasn't been sanctioned yet. Israel, as well as the United States, for backing this occupation and genocide, the whole world really should rise up and lobby some sanctions against these two nations. But Thank you, Chalu. Jihe, what about you? What are some of the things that you're following that you think folks should, you know, that you would like folks to kind of know more about?
Yeah, so one thing that I've been really noticing is how Israel is using food as a weapon. You know, more and more Palestinians are starving, right? And this conflict is causing so much food insecurity and, you know, bombing the land, right? It's ruining farms and food and plants and things that Palestinians, you know, rely on for their food. And it's just really disheartening to see. And, you know, this is all connected to, right, environmental justice. And I think that's something that, you know, we all should care about and we should all follow. Another thing that I've been seeing online is the ways in which Israel uses sexual violence in particular as a tool against, you know, Palestinian women, children, and even men. And it's just really disheartening to see. I'm just seeing so many, like, you know, footage online, and it's just really sad and heartbreaking. And I think that's something that we shouldn't turn our eyes against.
Absolutely. Thank you. You're absolutely right. The contamination of this, of the land, the level of destruction, the destruction of agricultural land, waterways. And this is already something that has been happening, the encroachment on agricultural land, the theft of land by settlers, as well as water apartheid, because the siege that's blocked all of these goods into Gaza, food, medical supplies, not just since October but of last year, but for years, because it's been like over a decade now that Israel, it's like what, been 12 years or something that Israel has really closed a lot of these, has prevented a lot of things from going in and out of Gaza, well, especially going into Gaza, and water is one of them. So, and food is another thing. And so we're seeing this completely amplified now. So these are some really good, really good points. Yeah.
Don't get me wrong. Although we started with some positives, it's still really, really fucking crazy. Like I said earlier, it's getting worse. And but you see, like the recent, I guess Germany is going to the international, ICJ. So they're being charged with supplying Israel with 30% of their weapons. So that kind of sets a precedent for, you know, I guess the U.S., anything. Besides all that, there's still the massive starvation, the killing, relentless killing. And I mentioned earlier, the rate actually got higher per day, you know, people being murdered per day. So, and then it just, it's a harmful thing that happens to me, but I basically assume that everyone is seeing what I'm seeing, and so it drives me crazy, like thinking that why isn't anyone like reacting as much, you know, and that there's so much silence, you know, even coming from even family members, friends, you know. It's like, come on, fucking 6 months of this insanity, like, you guys want to live in a world like this, like, where this shit is fucking normal? Like, fuck. Like, you know. But then, like, are they seeing what I'm seeing? I mean, I'm sharing it every day. I see, like, my stories. When I share the more violent images, because I wanted to shock people into, like, action, I see that I get less views, you know? Mm-hmm. But, I mean, come on, fucking look at it and then do something about it, you know? That's what we're here for. That's why we got to keep protesting and disrupting. I mean, it's already to the point, the general consensus around the world is like, we got to do more. And it's basically we got to affect the economic change that allowed this to happen. So, you know, how do we do that? Here in the Marianas, we're so far removed, but you know, there's got to be a way to make a statement, make an impact, get people to, I hate the term wake up, but fucking, like, you know, like, think about it. That's what I would say. Fucking at least stop and think about it.
Yeah, and there is so much silence in our community. It is just crazy. Like, this culture of silence, incredibly discouraging, you know, Palestinian people, men, women, children being murdered right before our eyes. You know, I remember hearing this phrase somewhere that this genocide is the most documented genocide in history, yet the most denied. Why is that? You know, like, why am I seeing, you know, I'm seeing video proof, Instagram videos, like, shared everywhere, you know, of firsthand accounts and videos of babies being bombed. And just, like, yeah. Why did I see, like, you know, I think a couple of weeks ago, a Palestinian child literally carrying the remains of his brother in his backpack. And it's just out. And people just turn their eyes against that. They just pretend it didn't happen, or they just refuse to see what's going on. And it honestly, I think, has to do with how we have been collectively desensitized from the violence of imperialism, especially in the Marianas, even though we are so closely connected to imperialism, right? And people just don't understand how silence is violence. It is complicity, and it is actively contributing to this genocide. And our Palestinian brothers and sisters are asking us to amplify their voices and to share in their grief, express our collective outrage, witness what is going on, and send a message that we, you know, we are seeing this, that we do not forget, and that we are completely condemning the U.S.-backed occupation, ethnic cleansing, and genocide of the Palestinians, and that we want a free Palestine now.
I mean, Al-Shifa Hospital is a great fucking example. We went, like, in October, it's like, they were saying, IOF wasn't saying they weren't going to touch any hospitals, they weren't going to bomb any hospitals, to a few weeks ago, to totally annihilating Gaza's oldest. Imagine that hospital is built in British mandate. Pretty insane.
And there were thousands of people taking shelter there, and they murdered many people there.
It was a massacre.
It was a horrible massacre. And this was just like literally a few days ago. And you both bring up really good points. I don't understand, and we probably never will understand, how people can choose to turn their eyes away from this so easily. Yeah. And there are, you're right, Jay, there are many reasons, like being desensitized, and we will talk about some of those connections, but this silence is overwhelming. We started Marianas for Palestine in response to a very problematic resolution that was introduced here in the Guam legislature. And since then, there's been silence from a lot of the leaders here with what's happening. And that is beyond disappointing. And in one of our, we had at least two protests now in front of the congressman's office, and the Guam PDN came to cover that protest. And we were talking about this silence of our leaders, and the article, they decided to focus on our emotion in the article rather than the message. And that was really unfortunate. That was a huge disservice to us, because it took away from the message that, you know, silence, like Jihei said, our leaders being silent is them being complicit in this genocide. And, you know, we have to also look at scholars and activists who are being silent right now, too, because in my opinion, no scholars who talk about decolonization and, you know, and our political history have any business doing that if they're not going to talk about Palestine. You know, in years, maybe in a few months from now, maybe in a couple of years from now, certain scholars who've been silent about this issue and who have refused to make connections to our history and our current colonial conditions, hopefully will have a lot of regret and guilt and shame, because how could you build a career off talking about colonization and decolonization and not talk about Palestine, where we're watching, like, literal, the carrying out of imperialism right before our eyes, American imperialism, Israelism, as well as Israeli imperialism. But really, this is American imperialism, Western imperialism at its core, because it's backed by all of these colonial powers, the United Kingdom, Germany, Australia, and the United States. These are like the last bastions of Western Europe and white European colonization. We are literally still the wards of that colonization, right? The products of that colonization, our current colonial condition. And if for all these scholars who are invested in talking about that history and about our any process for decolonization, any people talking about how we're going to decolonize ourselves without talking about Palestine, it just doesn't make any sense. And it's infuriating. And there are people in our government at the University of Guam who are paid, these salaries and these public institutions, who refuse to talk about Palestine, and they are failing us. They are absolutely failing us. What business do they have talking about the military buildup and security and decolonization if they're not talking about the ongoing genocide and occupation of Palestine. And I think we should call that out right here and now. Some of these folks are friends and, fellow, comrades. I used to consider comrades, but maybe not so much. You know, I don't know. Hopefully they hear this and they respond, but it's not without question or invitation, you know, whether it's for a moment of silence at a, I don't know, particular decolonization conference that didn't happen, or whether it was an invitation to speak on a panel with us about, security and geopolitics in relation to Palestine. Like, though that, lack of response is something that's going to haunt people. And it's definitely not something we're going to forget. We're not going to forget people's silence. And when we all celebrate a free Palestine, they're going to want to be with us. And we're going to remember, I don't know if you could party with us, man. you weren't out in the streets with us. You weren't showing up to the panels. You weren't saying you were making these remarks in your fancy hotel conference room. I don't know.
La.
But something, another, but I really appreciate Salam wanting to also focus on the positive, because one thing that has happened. So it was November 22nd was the last time we were all here on FNATSU. And so much has happened then. And what happened in December was the passing of the ceasefire resolution in the Commonwealth of the Northern Marianas legislature. And this is a picture of some of us standing outside the CNMI legislature building. Some folks from Guam and Saipan, really beautiful. You can see, of course, Salam and his family, his sister and his wife, and friends from Marianas, Pride Marianas, from our Commonwealth 670. I'm so proud of this moment. It was truly such an honor to be here with you this day, Salam. I don't think people realize, that this moment is so critical because it's colonies of the United States. What we're doing is we're going outside of any of that colonial framework. We're going outside of asking Congress and asking the president and asking the UN. We're saying we as the people of the Marianas want a ceasefire. And that is a beautiful, powerful thing and moment to celebrate. And this is all because of your work, Chelu. And I feel like we really need to shout that out right now, because we all helped with the call campaigns and the letter writing campaigns but you single-handedly, you held so many protests. You went to so many of these lawmakers, spoke to them directly. You were consistent. You didn't give up. And it's really because, we really have to, and you were there twice. You and your family presented testimony twice for the ceasefire resolution. So let's talk about that for a little minute. Maybe we could talk about some of the strategies that helped to make that possible and some of your reflections on that huge accomplishment, really. People will say, we've had some people say, and what is that going to do? They really have no idea how meaningful this is. That's
mm-hmm. Yeah, the symbolic, what it represents is us being autonomous, being independent, and something basically that I couldn't stop. I just had to do it. It was every waking moment I was thinking about it, what could I do? And it was just gnawing at me. And I think there was a solid week of straight calling. If they weren't answering, I'd go up with whatever free time I had to try and catch them at their office. And I did do that and speak to some of the legislators, the representatives personally. So that helped a lot. And, it also helps a lot being from the Marianas, we're all somehow connected. We know, families and everyone's got a little bit history with each other. So that helped a lot. I knew, some of the legislatures and I, pleaded with them. They know I'm Palestinian. And so, yeah, when I was there, I was really, you know, I would say like pleading, like more like, you know, like really giving, trying to make them understand where I was coming from, how, yeah, so yes, it did get personal, but you know, it's really something I just couldn't stop. And it, like, timing was of the essence, because it was, they're about to go into a holiday break, and I felt like that if they were going to go on to break, they would kind of lose the momentum, forget about it, come back, and then not even act on the resolution. So yeah, it was right before the holidays. I was really pushing hard for it. It was awful timing, but you know, what was happening then, it was like, what holidays? You know, this is more important than any holidays. Let's get this passed, you know. And I also pointed out the historic aspect of it, just, you know, being a territory. I hate that term, but you know, a U.S. territory being one of the first ones to pass a resolution calling for a ceasefire, that was really important, because, well, before that, we only had a few city councils in the U.S. that passed ceasefire resolutions. So, yes, we were one of the first. Oh, Hawaii is right now is getting pretty close. I think I read that they're about to pass a ceasefire resolution, which I'm hoping for, too. So, you know, even though it goes to show that it still needs to be done, you know. So Guam is not too late. Guam, if Hawaii is about to pass theirs, Guam can still pass a ceasefire resolution, because it really means a lot. You know, like, yeah, a lot of, you know, we're heavily militarized, but doesn't mean that our mind and our hearts have to be. Like, we can still show a humanitarian aspect. We, like, as Chamo, Chamolinian people, Carolinians, you know, we need to show that part, most definitely.
Thank you. Yeah, definitely. Let's talk about that maybe for Guahan. You know, you're absolutely right. There's this ceasefire resolution now in the CNMI that Guahan can look to, and now Hawaii is coming up soon now to pass the ceasefire resolution. And I think it's something that's really important to recognize are that these are Pacific Island nations that are currently colonized and occupied by the United States, and how meaningful that is to say, you know, we as these colonized people stand in solidarity with Palestine and demand the ceasefire now. And what are some of the challenges, you know, do you both think in getting this, you know, happening here in Guam? Of course, we want our Guam legislature to introduce a resolution, and that is definitely going to be our, you know, a next step for us. The letter writing campaign is still up. Of course, we're going to reframe it to be, you know, more harder focused on Guam leaders now, who still have to take action. What do you think some of the things we need to do are, and what are some of the challenges we have with getting, you know, not just a ceasefire resolution? Maybe we can even think about this, like we talked about just before we hopped on the podcast too, is how we'd like to see actions escalate. You know, watching all of these incredible actions as well in huge cities where people are shutting down highways and shutting down ports where weapons are being sent to Israel and shutting down the weapons manufacturing companies. And it's just been so incredible to watch. And of course, people are doing this, putting their lives at risk, you know, whether it's risk of arrest, risk of injury, risk of death, right? But so necessary to disrupt business as usual and to just point out how, you know, horrible the situation is, that it takes an action this strong to get a response from the community. So we haven't seen any actions this big here. What, you know, how, what are some of the ways we'd like to see actions escalate, and what are some of the obstacles in escalating action here? You know, we can hypothesize or theorize what some of those obstacles are, but there are definitely obstacles that kind of prevent us from taking such big actions, but also needs in our community. So like for me, one thing I think about is training. I would love, you know, for us to train folks to interface with police, to, in certain strategies for this kind of protest escalation, and ways of keeping each other safe in this kind of action. I would love to get that as soon as possible so we can escalate, but, that's just one thing. What are some of the other elements or dynamics that you think impact this escalation in action and maybe even Guam's leaders responding to our demands for them to call for a ceasefire?
Yeah, definitely. I'm one person, I'm itching for escalating action. But yeah, I mean, here in my honesty, it is difficult because, you know, we're very respectful of our Saina and everyone. We don't want to, but at the same time, we really need to, like, dispenser, but there's a genocide going on. We need to, like, you know, we need. So, but there are ways, like how to say it, more like replacing flags with Palestinian flags, you know, like it's kind of like more like, you know, a little bit of vandalism, but at least it's not getting anyone hurt or anything like that, putting anyone in danger. So those are things I've been thinking of, putting a massive like Palestinian flag on our failed casino. Maybe, just ways of how do I get more people to be aware of, you know, and so, it's just really hard, like blocking ports here, and it's a difficult action to do. I wish we really could do it without getting anyone in trouble or harmed or anything. So if anyone's got ideas, please call me, let me know. But yes, we really need to, in terms of the legislature, more personal meetings, events to invite them to, like specifically them, targeted for them. If you know someone who knows a legislature, try to get to them to make that connection and just set up as many meetings as possible, and get to them one by one until you got enough to, I guess, get them moving. And, you know, that's all I could say for now. But yeah, it's put pressure on them, just more pressure.
I was like trying to think of, you know, certain barriers that we've been experiencing and like why we haven't been escalating as much. I think one thing has to do with this, like, maybe of legal resources, maybe an education, like, for example, maybe like in case of like arrests or something like that. Yeah. I think myself and a lot of like, people that I know, like we won't know how to like protect ourselves, you know, in those cases. And like, especially like, I feel like in the Marianas and on Guam here, like there is, you know, heavy policing and incarceration.
Yeah.
And I think there's ways in which we need to learn about how to navigate and and respond to certain legal and criminal procedures here. Yeah.
Yeah. Also, our Department of Corrections are a mess. I do not want to talk about it. So, yeah.
Yeah, no, it's absolutely true. It's absolutely true. We're heavily policed, and here it's almost like there's a criminalization rise now about like locking people up and leaving them kind of locked up. And then, so we have a lot of people incarcerated at the moment, and and those things are definitely connected, right? The prison industrial complex and the military industrial complex and what's happening in Palestine. And I think that, and of course, racism and white supremacy.
Yeah, those great, the billboards of Guam, the one better a meth head than your loved one. Like,
yeah, the billboards, oh my goodness.
Yeah, normalizing violence.
Yeah, and there's this weird sort of, it's a weird sort of backlash right now with this. It's really interesting because for over the years with the different, you know, groups and actions around militarization or environmental issues or you know, our ancestral burials, even they're always met with some kind of resistance or criticism, none with as much hostility as our actions around Palestine. And we should definitely talk about that for a little bit. How that might prevent us from escalating, but also how that definitely has increased sort of the policing and criminalization of activists, of scholars who are out and talking about Palestine, of any people in government, anybody. There's right now, there's a huge you know, move to silence people on social media, right? There's Meta is shutting people down. Like, there is really an active silencing of the voices of opposition, of American imperialism and Israeli occupation, but also, you know, silencing of voices specifically calling for a free Palestine. So, so let's talk about that for a little bit. Gosh, that was a lot of everything. Let's talk about maybe the over-policing and silencing, but also how that could impact the escalation, and as well, because we talked about cultural, there's definitely cultural implications for why things don't escalate, as well as legal issues, but also this active silencing and also the hostility. We're all facing a lot of hostility. What have been some of the, let's talk about some of those experiences.
Yeah. That's pretty crazy. Our first protests, we did have hostilities. We had this guy driving by. I couldn't get a good look at him. He seemed local, and he was just like from his car passing by, just giving us the finger and cussing us out. So I was like, oh shit, you know, that caught me by surprise. And then the second time, or same protest, the second guy was an American guy, fat guy, and he had half his body out the window with his finger, and he was screaming, fuck you guys. And it's like, oh shit, you know. So, and then that kind of been about every protest, it's usually like two or three of those incidents. And it drives me crazy. But when one day I couldn't take it anymore, so I made a sign to hold up, and it just said, fuck Israel. Because, you know, I just really wanted to tell everybody. So I went and I held that by the road, and I was expecting a lot more hostilities on that day. But surprisingly, no, I was getting a lot of honks, and people were supporting me. So, but yeah, there is a need to be safe, to feel a little safe when we are out there protesting, and because when we're doing this good thing, this thing that's right, it feels really good to have that little bit of support, of safety. And yeah, we don't have like police presence to back us up, even though we announce our protests or anything. But, you know, so it is a little scary. And yeah, so that's one factor that prevents us from escalating more, is that lack of a sense of security. Although, like, even sometimes in the back of my mind, like, man, I wish you would, you know. But yeah,
it's frustrating for me to think about, like, Salam, you're Palestinian and Chamorro, and you're from, and you grew up there, and you're standing outside and you're protesting for Palestine, and for someone to yell at you, to cuss you out, it just I can't wrap my head around it. Like, I like for us to get yelled at, as for those of us who are not Palestinian, it's different, you know. Like, for me, in my mind, like, it sucks, but it's nothing, you know, compared. But like, yeah, for someone to have the nerve to yell at you,
and it's not just me. There's Palestinian kids. There's Bizan and her kids that are there too. My daughter and, you know, toddlers that are there, and they're like, they're losing their shit. And but
yeah,
you know,
no,
it's crazy how brainwashed. Oh, because you could just go online on social media, and if you find a Zionist page, and you read their posts, and the, like, when I want to get a really good laugh, I find a Zionist page. I try to look for one of their stupid posts, and then read the comments and watch them get owned and debunked in the comments. It's just, you know, like, I just, you know, it feels good because you see how stupid, how much they try so hard to lie. It's insane.
Jihei, do you want to talk about, comment on any of that, the hostility or anything, or escalation or anything?
Yeah, I just want to second that, I guess. Yes, I feel like there was a lot of hostility, especially in like the early protests that we did. And like, I remember, I don't know if you remember, Nick, like when police cars would like show up to monitor us and like ask for our, like, you know, permits and stuff. And I'm like,
I remember that. Yeah,
I'm
that,
like,
you're,
why are you here? Like,
this, well, is that, so that was the one at the governor's complex at Adaloop, and we had a park permit. Pretela Texan actually got the park permit and got the rentals and got a sound engineer, and we were setting up. And we were harassed by somebody. They came up and they started, this man in his truck with a Guam Pet Animals hospital, a Guam Pet Hospital sticker on the back of it, came and tried to harass me. And he was like, what is this? And I harassed us. He was like, what is this? And I was like, this is a peace protest. What for? It's against the war happening. And he said, but what side are you on? And I was like, oh, I'm not going to talk to this person, I guess. So I immediately got out my phone and I said, excuse me, what did you ask me? And he goes, what side are you on? You know, and so I just started taking his picture, and he said, you know, what about the beheaded babies? And I'm not going to take a moment to send this guy all of the news articles that debunked that, you know, that never happened. That was horrible media. In fact, that, you know, and I'm not going to talk to him about how the media is complicit in the genocide either. I'm just going to take his picture and walk away. Well, he came back an hour later. This is what was the scary part, is the same guy came back an hour later. And he was definitely trying to intimidate us. And so that's why the cops came. That's why he is talking about. I called a friend who called the cops. A friend was worried about us. It was actually a friend from Independent Guahan who was worried about us, and they had called the police and for us. We didn't call the police. We called, because so we put on the chat or something. I talked to my friend and said, this guy's come around now, a second time.
She
said, I'm calling the cops right now. And she did, and that's why we had six police cars come. to check on us, and they got the license plate and everything, and the description of the vehicle, and of course the description of the incident. But it wasn't the first exchange that bothered me. It was the second time when he came back an hour later. And at that point, we had children and families in the field, and didn't want him to harass them or try to intimidate them or to bother them at all. So that was something that was probably scary. But I think the 6 police cars were scarier. Sure enough, or however many police cars it was like, we were like, oh my gosh. And then somebody had reported us for not having a permit, which was really ridiculous. So we had a permit. So the park police came, and it was probably that guy, and we had to show up. But that's nothing. We definitely get a lot of middle fingers. One of the worst was this man screaming "fuck you" at us so loud, and he was in a car in it with his family. So it was even in front of his own children and partner which in my mind is, of course, abuse. It's abusive and it's violent. And mm-hmm. he was being violent and abusive in that moment to all of us as well as his family.
Yeah.
And and it's interesting that, that Salami mentioned, the one person was local and one person was white. We've seen it's the same here, it's interesting. It's mostly been white men. We have been harassed by one white woman, and mm-hmm. now we have been harassed by several local islanders as well. So mostly white men, so that have been the most annoying. But let's talk a little bit about the needs. So one of the things we've been doing a lot of different things in Saipan and in Guahan. There was recently a kite event that was for years, a couple years now, the Children of Gaza broke the Guinness Book of World Records for the most amount of kites flown in a single location. And it's huge peace action, peace protest, really. It's so powerful. This kite event was sponsored also. The one here in Guahan, Somnak Circles had approached, a friend from Somnak Circles had approached us to do this. And Pertay La Texan, Hita La Texan, Micronesia Climate Change Alliance, helped to organize this one here. It was beautiful. And then Salam and his family helped also with MCCA and our Commonwealth 670 helped to do the one in Saipan. And so we've done like these really beautiful kite events. We've done some film and discussions. We've done some webinars and podcasts now. We have done a lot of different actions, other than these protests, other than the campaigns for the ceasefire resolutions, which involve letter writing, emailing, calling. And also we released this huge statement that had over a dozen organizations sign on to it. But we've accomplished quite a lot, but the webinars are so necessary. Our folks need a lot more education. And I just wanted to play this clip of Issa talking really quickly at our recent webinar we did called Linking Liberation and Indigenous Solidarity, Palestine, Micronesia, Marianas, and Turtle Island. And we had with us a wonderful panel. Of course, Salam, you were with us. We had Tina Taitsuno-Delisle, Vince Diaz, Demetrius Johnson from Indian Collective, and Dr. Issa Areola with our Commonwealth 670. And it was such an important conversation because it's hard to believe that even now, now we're in 6 months, half a year, like Salam said, and we're still arguing with people whether or not Palestinians are indigenous, whether this is Palestinian land, and whether they're experiencing settler colonization. I can't wrap my head around it. It's senseless to me that anybody would even question that now. Like we're watching, manifest destiny, that same sort of idea that killed the Native Americans and stole their land. The same idea being carried out right now. And, you know, Salam, what are your, you know, maybe we'll play Issa's video, but after we play Issa's video, let's talk about like this conversation a little bit more. Sorry, Makit, can you go ahead and play? Thank you.
What is so great about this international solidarity is that we have these foundations to build one off of one another, while really being able to dig into like the importance of the local context in which we're living in as Indigenous peoples to our land, right? But here we are, like, let's use the foundations that we're building with one another through this international solidarity as Indigenous folks. That is what is so great.
Yeah, so that's just a great quote from Issa, kind of talking about how critical this moment is, that how our connection, our liberation is so connected to the liberation of Palestine, and how our Indigenous movements can really nurture each other, build off from one another. And we all, of course, absolutely agree with that. But Salam, what are some of your thoughts about this, about that, you know, this constant debate that we're in with people about what's happening in Palestine, and also, you know, the importance of a panel like that?
Yeah. Because that's their main objective. It's part of that blueprint. Like you said, that's how, you know, Manifest Destiny, how all the Native Americans were slaughtered. So it is part of the blueprint to demonize, strip the Native population of everything, their identity, their culture, all that. And then make it look like they're the good guys who came and civilize them, turn them into, or change their world for the better, who are using their resources, making it seem like using their resources better. But we all know that, or we know that that's totally not. I mean, that's the blueprint. Sorry, left my train of thought. So the Native population, taking everything away from them, their resources, and then making it seem like they're the ones who provide everything, made their world better, keeping their culture alive. You know, it's, we've seen it before, and to see it unfold right now in such a horrific way, like, you know, like mentioned earlier, the most documented. And then to not even stop and think, like, how does that affect us here? You know, we've been, you know, how does it affect us here? And when you stop to think about it, it's like, we've been colonized, four times over, especially here in Saipan, to the point where, that blueprint was enacted on us, you know? Now we celebrate July 4th, like, you know, is it really our independence? You know, it's so, to make those connections is truly essential to, like, really understand your own history, so that you can shape a better world for your children. You know, that's so fundamental. And so to see this pattern of, ethnically cleansing the Native population in order to get their resources, at the same time justifying that with like a need for national security, a sense of feeling safe, but only for a particular, you know, set of people, it's BS, because it's happening to us now. You know, like, we need your islands to put up these bases because there's a threat from China. But, you know, it's, we know that's BS too. Because, like I said, we've seen the blueprint. It's been done before, and they're just doing it again. And, it, you know, what we need to step up now to change this world so that they don't, or else they're just going to keep taking everything, you know, like, we got to protect what's natural in, you know, native populations, and we should be the ones making the decisions for our lands and our resources. And to me, that's something worth fighting for and spending, you know, all my free time on.
Absolutely, Chalu, you're absolutely right. And I even, as you were saying that, you know, the settlers claim to be the caretakers of culture, it really reminds me of like when we hear it, I could hear some of that in that kind of rhetoric here, you know, when people say like, oh, well, the military takes better care of things than we do. It's because the military is occupying that land that's so pristine. It's just ridiculous. But that, you're absolutely right. It's like displacing people from the land, occupying the land, destroying culture, rebuilding on top of the culture, right? Rebuilding, whether it's a marine base or a firing range or a runway, or, you know, rebuilding on the ruins of Palestine, rebuilding Israel on the ruins of Palestine. Like, that's, yeah. How is any of that taking care of culture, taking care of sacred places, taking care of heritage, taking care, it's all a lie. And so that, to then say that that's part of that conditioning that you're speaking about, like further displaces us then, because it's like, not only are we physically displaced and erased, it's also happening psychologically, that then our occupier, our colonizer is telling us that they're actually the better caregivers and stewards of the land and our culture, and then we believe it. And that's something mm-hmm. that we really do need to help our folks.
We buy it all up.
Absolutely. We have to really help our folks be more critical of this and break it down. So thank you so much for that. And also for, you know, I think that might be a good segue for us to talk about the connections. So we had, you know, made a few slides on Instagram that kind of talk about our connections, but we don't have time to go through all of them, but I thought we should definitely put up a few of them. One is the one that says U.S. military tests Iron Dome. So a lot of people don't know this. Hear this one. Our islands are used as test sites. Like, a lot of people didn't know this. And we really need to thank Dr. Issa Areola of our Commonwealth 670 for finding this article here and this, and developing, you know, this series of slides with us. There's some of us helped, but she really led the way. And it was in response to a lot of the ridiculous things we were hearing and seeing on Instagram, right? But here we have the U.S. military tests Iron Dome in Guam with eyes on threats. Like, none of this makes sense. First of all, Iron Dome, which is used in Israel, is specifically for like short range and ground missiles.
Yeah,
this is really an excuse for the United States to waste a bunch of money, pollute the environment, disrupt local lives and sacred spaces with these war exercises, but it's all to also justify Israeli occupation of Palestine. It's how closely connected we are. The militarization of this region is so closely connected to what's happening in Palestine. And then
you know, they're soon, they're testing the AI now in Gaza. I'm sure they're going to be using that AI here soon too.
Yeah, that's something else. That's so beyond alarming. It is just evil. It's just pure evil. I can't think of another word right now to describe that we're watching the use of this technology for pure evil. And you're absolutely right. We should worry. Can we go to the one that says, U.S.-backed wars disproportionately impact Pacific Islanders. So here's another one. So, since October, we've actually seen 1,200 troops been deployed to the Middle East. And this is something, this is part of our cycle of militarization and colonization, is because we are a poor community because of our colonial history and our militarization. We also have a high enlistment rate of our young folks joining the military and others, you know, for economic and educational opportunities, you know, so-called opportunities, right? But like, and there are many reasons why people join the military. And a lot of us have relatives or come from families that have, that's part of the nuance of being colonized people, is we are going to have people in the military or who work for the military, who were in the military in our families, but also we're going to also struggle with it. We're also going to be in conflict with it because we see what it does to our islands. Well, here is definitely a clear way we're connected to Palestine, is that our folks, you know, are ultimately overrepresented in military service per capita. And yeah. So we're contributing to this. We're contributing to this violence and we're stuck in this cycle of it. So, let's go ahead and go to the one that says settler colonialism in Palestine and the Pacific, because here I think this is so critical, because we share histories of settler colonialism, and a lot of people will deny that that's what's happening in Palestine right now, which again is just so unsettling. But of course, we've seen it here, that they intend to replace the indigenous population. They claim and occupy indigenous lands and try to replace the indigenous population. But it's also, we see it through the way military settles here. And we can't ignore it. We can't ignore what's happening in Palestine and fight for our own decolonization at the same time. And of course, we're connected because of, you know, folks like you, Salam, who are our community members, our friends and our relatives who have friends and relatives in Palestine. You're watching this happen every single day. And so, sorry, if we could go to the very last one that says standing in solidarity. Yeah, there we go. So, of course, we understand. Yeah, I mean, well, we don't understand. We're watching you. We're witnessing our relatives and our friends and our community members witness their loved, you know, praying for their homeland and their loved ones from across the ocean. And so we see it. We are so connected. There's so many ways. And that standing in solidarity with Palestine supports our indigenous rights. So we can go from these great slides that we put up, we posted on our Instagram. Please, you know, check out the Marianas for Palestine Instagram. There are a lot of great things like this on the Instagram, but also I think this is good to bring us to a point where we're at now, because while this genocide has been happening, we've seen multiple military exercises taking place here in Guahan and in the Northern Marianas. And right now there's one called the, I lost it, but we just had Cope North here. And the one that we have here is the Agile Reaper, right? Yes. Yeah, so here, this is a picture that says, cancel Cope North, free Palestine. And then the other picture says, no war games and a genocide. And we actually, we got this idea because Salam, our friends in Saipan became aware of a military exercise outreach event called Petajet, in which children and families was marketed to young people to go and pet one of these war jets. And of course, some of these same warcraft are used right now, are the same kinds of warcraft, whether it's a transport plane or an F-15X, F-16, are being used right now to commit these horrible war crimes in occupied Palestine. And so, Salam, maybe if you could talk about this, you know, this site, you were the first to say no war games and a genocide. And then we took your lead. It was like you and just two other folks who went out to protest Petajet and Saipan. And now we're in another exercise, and there may be another Petajet event there. Let's talk about that for a second.
Yeah. I couldn't believe it when I saw the Petajet event advertised here in Saipan. It shocked me, and I just felt like I had to say something about it, do something about it. What even shocked me more was the turnout. how normalized this is, and you know, like how the military is look up to as, you know, some kind of a savior or provider. And yeah, so I really had to show up and do something about it. There were so many people, and I was expecting to actually be thrown out by the ports police for disrupting the event. But I was actually, you know, left alone. The ports police did see me. I was on the back of my truck with my signs and my flags. And surprisingly, people came up and supported and understood why I was there. And that felt really good. And, you know, and it shows that we should be doing this more often. We should be protesting that they shouldn't just be here using our islands at their free will to test, to do their exercises, which are really war maneuvers, and expanding on this perceived threat from China, which is basically, you know, perpetuating this ongoing war, you know, because really the military industrial complex is so pervasive. It's, if you can't see it, how much it affects your life, then, you know, just really take a look around. And just going to the insanity of these Petajet events is a great example. I mean, really targeted to the kids. It's crazy.
It is. It's so, it's extremely unsettling, the normalization.
And also, I want to, sorry, yeah, bring up the Marianas being the whole tip of the spear. If that doesn't piss you off, you know, like, geez, military speaking, we're like the cannon fodder, you know, like the first ones to get attacked. So,
yeah, thank you. We do not want, we are constantly being talked about like we're just a place for war to happen. And we're just the collateral damage, and I think all of us are quite sick of it. And you're right; it's used to justify this militarization. But when we protested Cope North here, that was just right after your protest for the Petajet. We did this protest here, and this was out in front of Anderson Air Force Base, and there were literally like thousands of cars going in for an air show that they were doing. That was only for people with base access. But there were thousands of cars, and we were only out there like an hour because then the air show started. But it was really hard to just keep, we were yelling, we were saying like, you're on stolen land, you're poisoning our air and our water. Yeah. These are, you know, war games and a genocide, ceasefire now, shame on you. And, yeah. It was sickening to kind of watch people drive in. We had different reactions. Some people waved and laughed. Some people, there were children, because they were busing school kids in for this, who were shocked, who were worried, and or kids in cars with their parents going, oh my gosh, what's going on? And then there were those very few who nodded, airmen who nodded and looked down and shame and sadness and knew what we were saying. And then it was just a few days after that, that Aaron Bushnell had self-immolated in front of the Israel embassy in Washington, D.C. And we woke up, a lot of us woke up to that news and in disbelief. And, you know, how somebody could take such drastic action. But his last words were Free Palestine. And he said that while these actions would be so drastic, nothing compares to what the people of Palestine are experiencing right now. I know a lot of us were impacted by Aaron's action.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Anything you'd like to say about that before we move on?
Yeah. Like the Agile Reaper exercise going on right now, their main communication command center is here on Saipan, and it's basically a mini base on our airport field, and you know, just filled with it's airmen, and I really want to go there and, you know, protest and hold a sign up and disrupt their exercise. I especially want to remind them about Aaron Bushnell and his bravery, and just get them to start to think, like, you know, like when you mentioned those people who passed by when you guys were protesting against Cope North, even just to get that little nod, especially from a youngster, you know, that we're making change and it's a positive, you know.
Well, I really want to thank you both so much for being here. We're coming to the end of the Fanatsu episode, but Salam and Jihe, thank you so much. It's an honor to be in this work with you both. We're going to end with Salam's video of that peace wave in Saipan. But before we do, and before Salam, you set up the video, any closing thoughts, any calls to action you want to make right now, calls to action or closing thoughts before we wrap up?
A call to action, closing thoughts. On April 15th, whatever you can do on a personal level to disrupt the economy, please do. It's a global call to action. Whether it's staying home, not going to school, not going to work, not using your card, or not buying anything on that day, do whatever you can on April 15th. You know, it's a call to escalate action all over the world. So, you know, if there isn't any action going on that you know of, then take it on a personal level and, you know, strike and do something to shut it down for Palestine. On another note, I want to thank you guys so much. It's been an honor. Jihe, is really always good to be here with you, and always thank you so much for, you know, getting us started, Manus Palestine. For my family and as a Palestinian, so much appreciation to all of you guys. Thank you so much. And everybody out there, you know, let's keep this going. Let's get it moving. You know, it's still got a long way to go. but let's keep fighting. We can see that everything's working. The protests are working. The boycotts are working. It's affecting them. And, you know, let's make some real change. Free Palestine. RIP Aaron Bushnell.
Yeah, thank you so much, Salam. Like, truly, you and our Palestinian brothers and sisters are the heart and soul of this movement. And I'm just so grateful to be a part of this and for you guys, and glad to be here. As like a final like call to action, I've been thinking about like solidarity, you know, as a non-Indigenous Asian person living on Guam. You know, I recognize that I am a settler on Indigenous land. I think a lot of people in our immigrant communities here in Guam, whether you are Filipino, Korean, Japanese, Chinese, we need to recognize the immense privilege we have to be here on Indigenous land, whether you are living, you know, on Turtle Island or Guam. We need to recognize that we wouldn't be here if not for U.S. imperialism. And so I think as Asian persons or settlers benefiting from Indigenous land and resources, we have the responsibility to uplift and amplify Native people and build solidarity for Indigenous struggles and join in on this call for liberation for Guam, for Palestine, and all nations struggling against imperialism and colonialism. So I think that's just a call to action that I wanted to express.
Excellent. Thank you so much. And thanks to Independent Guam and Maget for hosting us. I'm Nick Flores from Pate, Latex, and Saber Tidian, and all of us together are Marian for Palestine. And we're going to close now with this amazing video Salam coordinated. Salam, is there anything you want to say before we play the video?
Yes, so there's it's just a landmark on Saipan that I was thinking of ways how to do more than just roadside waving, so we decided to go up on this landmark and get drone footage at the same time. So yeah, it was a good turnout. We got also the people who were there for the protest. They were happy to go up there and check it out. Yeah,
it's beautiful. Thank you so much for sharing that with us, and Sanamas, everybody.
Yeah.